and we switch focus now. Have you waited online lately? At the post office, maybe. The mall parking lot, the airport security check. How about those seasonably long lines at the supermarket? Waiting online has become as much a part of the Christmas season as gift wrapping and mistletoe. But think for a minute. What's your worst waiting in line story from this year? We want to hear it, especially if you're waiting online right now. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about the practice and the psychology of waiting online, but first, the etymology. Joan Houston Hall joins us now. She's chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, and she joins us now on the phone from her home in Wisconsin, and welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I will bet from my usage you know where I grew up.
Well, if you wait online, there's not much question.
That's from New York City or the area thereabouts.
Right, particularly northern New Jersey.
And that's exactly where I grew up. Now, everybody else waits in line.
That's right. Prepositions are notoriously slippery. And going way back to Old English, the prepositions on and in had a lot of variability, particularly when case was important in the language. But in the last 250 years or so, according to the OED anyway, the use of on, where many people consider in to be standard, is basically restricted to English dialects and to North America. So there's a British-American split here. But as you noted, within this country, there's also a regional split where on is in New York and in is in most of the rest of the country.
How long have these variations been around?
Well, we tried to find the earliest example we could of the phrase to wait online, and we got back to 1896 in the Brooklyn Eagle. But there's another quotation we found from the New York Times, which is particularly apt for today because it was published on December 23rd in 1914. And it says, "The people may have heeded the warning of prudence and practiced economy in their Christmas expenditures this year, but there are no signs of the practice in the holiday business of the post office, which was never larger. A week ago, there were daily crowds in all the branches in this city waiting online to send matter by parcel post and registered mail. And while the Christmas offerings thus dispatched may be generally less expensive than in the fat years, the custom of making Christmas gifts has obviously been neglected by very few."
And, of course, you'd have to search for a while before you found somebody who thought online was more peculiar than thus dispatched, but...
But it does show that some things just don't change.
Well, online has changed. It now has a double meaning.
Yes, it does. But I doubt that many people confuse the two. I think when you wait online on your computer, you're not likely to be thinking about the distinctions between inline and online.
Well, of course, one of the main things you do when you go online is wait online. But that's another thing. Any sign that New Yorkers are going to give up standing online and join the rest of the country in line? Is the usage waning at all?
No, I don't think so. And in fact, it's one of the things that people recognize as being a particularly New York thing. So if someone hears someone say they're waiting online, they immediately say, aha, you're from New York.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, your dictionary is full of examples that document the regional idiosyncrasies of a speech like this.
Yes, indeed.
How do you go about compiling that information?
Well, it's been a very long process. We began in 1965 and for 5 years sent field workers out to 1,002 different communities across the country and asked them all the questions in a huge questionnaire and then compiled all that information in a database so that we can bring up maps of the U.S. and show where any given word or phrase was used. So we know right away whether it's regional or not.
So you go online to figure out online and inline. Oh, that's enough. That's enough puns on that. Joan Houston Hall, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Joan Houston Hall is chief editor for the Dictionary of American Regional English, and she was with us on the line from Wisconsin, where she pointed out they stand in line. Well, whether you prefer to stand online to see Santa or wait in line to mail your packages, we want to hear your worst horror stories of the season. Did you get stuck waiting somewhere unexpected? How did you pass the time? Do you plan your day to avoid lines or to accommodate the wait? 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's begin with Ardith, who's with us in Mill Valley, California.
Hi. How you doing? This is like listening to what actually is happening in my life, to listen to you guys on the radio. I'm in it.
You're in a line.
Yes, I am.
What are you waiting for?
I'm waiting to do a routine errand to get an extra pair of contact lenses to go on a beach vacation. It should take me about 4 minutes, and I've been waiting for 25, and I probably have another 25, judging from this.
And by the time you actually get to the store, you may need some Maalox as well.
Pepto-Bismol.
How do you, well, obviously, other than listening to the radio, how do you pass the time? Are you a finger tapper?
No, I'm not. I'm a person who has a cell phone on a speaker, and I can just sort of talk to it and tell it to dial numbers. So I talk to people.
You talk to your, you call your family, your friends, catch up on business?
Exactly.
So this has resolved your dilemma about what to do while you're waiting online.
I actually got to talk to you. What a privilege.
All right, Dave, thanks very much, and we hope the line breaks soon.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joining us now is Richard Larson, who's a professor of civil engineering and director of the Center for Advanced Educational Services at MIT. He's made an extensive study of the practice and psychology of queuing up, which is, of course, what standing online is called in Britain. He joins us from his home in Lexington, Massachusetts, and welcome.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. What do people tell you is the worst thing about waiting online?
Or waiting in line if they're not from New York.
Well.
Well, I think the worst thing is, rather than the actual magnitude of the delay, it's unfairness. When they perceive that somebody who shows up at a store or a post office or whatever after them gets served before them.
And there's a universal conviction that if there are three lines, you will get on the slowest one.
Absolutely. And just to even imagine just a roulette wheel, if there are three lines and they're all more or less equally the same, you choose a random one, there's two chances out of three that the other two lines will move faster than yours.
Now, you've traced the psychology of queuing, as you call it, back to a specific example from the 1950s in New York City. He's the king of congestion. Tell us a little bit about that.
Maybe that's when they started standing on lines for elevators. The high-rise life became very popular in the 50s, post-World War II time. High-rise apartment houses, office buildings, hotels, et cetera. And people started noticing that there were rush hours for elevators, just like there are rush hours in subways and cars and traffic. And they started complaining to the owners of these high-rise buildings, hey, the elevators at 8 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock at night or whenever are taking forever to get there. And so the ingenious, you know, the typical engineering or science approach would be say, well, these buildings are obsolete. They didn't design enough elevator shafts. But the ingenious idea was to say, well, the problem is not the magnitude of the delay waiting for the elevator. It's typically a minute or 90 seconds or so. The problem is the complaints about this. And so we could reduce the complaints to near zero, we will have solved the problem. And the ingenious idea was, well, let's fill these people's time with something useful, something creative, something entertaining. And they put in floor-to-ceiling mirrors next to all the elevators. And guess what? The complaints vanished to near zero.
Because, like, I guess all primates, there's nothing we like better doing than looking at ourselves.
Well, we look at ourselves. Some people even coyly flirt with somebody through the mirror. It's less provocative, I guess, than eye-to-eye contact.
We're speaking with Richard Larson of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology about the dilemma and the psychology of waiting online, in line, depending where you're from. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Heather, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks.
I actually really believe in this, the psychology of unfairness playing in. My story is that I bought tickets for Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, online, and went to the theater where, you know, online they say you won't have to wait, you'll walk right in, you'll get a seat. Well, you have to exchange this printed out ticket for actual tickets at a certain computer stand, and that computer was not working well. So all the people who had bought online and paid extra were waiting in line where people who had just walked in and tried to buy tickets were all getting in before us. And everybody was getting very upset and angry over a movie, which is really silly. But again, that sense of unfairness took over, and people got very upset.
Richard Larson, that's exactly what you were talking about.
This is what I'm talking about. Here's an example, too, that I think this caller will never forget this incident and might not ever use that facility again for buying tickets online. There are a lot of cases that in our files of people who have lifetime pledges never to go back to a particular vendor of some kind of service because of one of these events.
Heather?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm, I'm wondering if I work in a physician's office. I'm a physician, and you know, one of the things we've worked with is changing the expectation. Because if the expectation meets the length of time you're waiting, that sense of unfairness goes down, and it's all this false expectation that people build up that causes more of the problem.
Can I comment on that?
Go ahead.
Please.
That's a perfect observation and classically true. And in fact, you can be a little bit Machiavellian about it. Because if you tell somebody there'll be a 25-minute wait when you know, in fact, it'll be 15 to 20 minutes.
Yes.
And then after 15 to 20 minutes, you say, hey, we're in good fortune. We have good luck here. We can see you right now. And by managing the expectation of the customer so that you deliver more than they expect, you actually end up, they think that you're 5 or 10 minutes ahead of schedule, even though you've delayed them 15 to 20 minutes.
Heather, let me make one other suggestion, which is to have magazines printed after 1975.
We'll remember that one.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Warren, and Warren's in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the line.
Hi there. Well, I'm sort of an expert at what I consider queuing, mostly because I've done it primarily in Europe. And I figured out this year I've actually spent more than 30 days, that is 30 times 24 hours, on line or in line or queuing for Radiohead concerts. I've followed the band all over the globe, and I always have tickets, but there's always a core group of people who want to be on the rail in front, you know, and have the best place, so they get there as much as 24 hours in advance and spend all day queuing. And this whole issue of fairness, it has become institutionalized. I'm sort of the queue meister now. And it doesn't always happen like this, but we actually number people as they get there and write their names down and put numbers on their hands to indicate you know, when they arrived, so that when the moment of crisis comes that they finally open the door, we actually go in the number we arrived at, which is... And this whole sort of sociology, I mean, the concerts are great, but I have all these friends now that I've met all over the world. A lot of the people show up at all the concerts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those are like my best friends now, are the people that I've spent hours and hours and hours waiting in the queue with.
And
it can also be a positive thing, is I guess what I'm calling about.
Well, let me ask.
It can be a pleasurable experience.
Let me ask Richard Larson then, is there a difference between waiting on or in or queuing up for line for something you really want, like these Radiohead tickets, or is it different if you're waiting for the thrill of meeting a Department of Motor Vehicles clerk?
Yeah, I just can't stand. I've noticed this before, you know, like if I'm in the bank
Warren,
and I have to wait for more than 5 minutes, I get really irritable.
Warren, let's bring Richard Larson in on this.
Well, I think if you have a group of people who are going after, say, rock tickets for a particular band or something, they actually form a social unit there, and you really can't say they're waiting in line in some sense of a captive audience in kind of a jail or a prison. They're forming their own social group, and that itself has value added. There's a book that was written in the Soviet Union that was banned there for a while the Soviet Union existed, called The Queue by Vladimir Sorokin. And it's available in multiple languages, including English. And it talks about this kind of case where you actually join a queue. And in fact, in Russia, the longer the queue, the more attractive it was because there was an economy of shortages. And the people figured, well, if it's a long queue, there must be something great at the end, something grand at the end. And virtually every human condition and activity known to us happens in the 3 or 4 days as this person is waiting. And there is a sociology and a social experience that happens from it.
Well, we just have a few seconds. There's other issues we could get to, I guess, including road rage. There's been obviously numbers of incidents of people stuck in traffic, getting angry with each other, people waiting online, breaking out into fights when they think somebody's trying to sneak ahead. There's some serious issues. And among them, we have to apologize for all of the people who called in, got online, and didn't have time for them to get on the air. We're sorry about that. We hope you won't refuse our service in the future, that you'll come back and listen to the program. Richard Larson, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Richard Larson, professor of civil engineering at MIT. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.